The following program is being brought to you on the Green Talk Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit thegreentalknetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability. Your hosts are Bill Reed and John Becker, co-authors of the Integrative Design Guide to Green Building. This program will help you take sustainability to the next level. Here are your hosts, Bill Reed and John Becker.
Good morning or afternoon, everybody. This is Bill.
And John. Hi, everyone.
And we have today a guest on our program, Lauren Yarmuth, who we'll introduce in a few minutes. The topic of the show, and we've been building up to this and certainly have more than hinted that this is where we're going, is the idea of how one practices consciousness. Now, what the heck does that have to do with green building is what we're talking about today. And, John, you want to add any insights to that before I roll on?
Maybe not insights, but maybe just a little brief background. The last four episodes, we talked about what we refer to in the book and often in our work as the four key subsystems that we need to integrate in order to deal with sustainable projects. And, of course, those were habitat, water, energy, and materials. So today we want to talk about the fifth element, which we really have found to be the universal element, and explore the key role that consciousness, the fifth element, plays in understanding the whole. I think that one of the words that we come across that describes this is called Akasha. And I think Bill and I were both introduced to this via a book called Science in the Akashic Field in terms of how it can be applied to sustainability. But Bill, there's a kind of an arc or a trajectory of why we're talking about this that I think I'd like to hear you talk about a little bit.
All right. Yeah. I've been... The word we use this word consciousness in many different ways. It's like we use the word sustainability in many different ways too, I think. You know, we talk about being conscious or developing consciousness or the consciousness movement, and we're using this word in at least three different perspectives. Dwayne Elgin, in his book The Living Universe, which I recommend highly, has an interesting trajectory that he outlines. And the first level of conscious or being consciousness happened to us maybe 15, 25,000 years ago, maybe longer. I'm not an archaeologist, but where we developed a sense of self. Before we were kind of one with the whole of nature, and then we became aware of ourselves and the ego started taking control. Now, that isn't necessarily a bad thing because it's actually taught us to do many things that we wouldn't have unless we had an awareness of who we are. But in the first stage of consciousness was a very weak sense of self. Now we've moved into an area where we are very aware of self, and the next level of consciousness then is reconnecting ourselves to nature once again. But that leads up to the third level, because it's very hard to be connected unless we are aware and disciplined in our ego. So the third level of consciousness is maintaining a strong sense of self, but also a conscious awareness of the unity with all of nature.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that at one point originally we were one with nature, living systems.
Yep.
Our ego has led us to be separated by virtue of the strong sense of self, but that in essence is an illusion with regard to the third level, which is understanding that we can participate as active members of that guild within nature, simply by becoming more and more conscious of that inseparable interrelationship.
Yeah, so there's the levels of consciousness are yourself, you're conscious of yourself, then conscious of the need to connect with others, and then, of course, the higher one is the consciousness of the whole.
So, Bill, I think that there's been a whole history of exploring consciousness through religious traditions and different forms of spirituality. We've talked about some of that in the past. How does this then become essentially a practical component of your work and what we do in terms of pursuing sustainability?
Well, I think it might be useful before we get into that, because I think we're going to get into a rich discussion with Lauren. One of the beginnings for my awareness of the role of consciousness and how important it is, not only through religion, was Joseph Campbell's work.
Oh, me too, actually, on the role of story and myth.
Yep. And I know you're pretty much into that, John. Do you want to talk about that a little?
Well, for me, it became really a phenomenal discovery when I began to look at Joseph Campbell's work, and that opened the door for me into most of Carl Jung's work. And it became a sort of personal raising of consciousness for me. I mean, one of the things that Jung said was that the primary role of the adult human is to bring into consciousness that which is not. And that, in a very very large way, has become sort of my driving mantra since I was in my early 30s when I made this discovery.
So we'll say more about that which is not. To a lot of people, they would say, what the hell does that mean?
In Jungian terms, and what I discovered for myself was at least a significant portion of my behavior and decision-making was driven by conditioning, whether it be parental or societal or from a familial system. It was not being completely conscious and intentional with regard to the decisions I was making and hence the behavior I was exhibiting and basically just kept getting me into trouble.
So reactive.
Yeah, and where this played out in for me was primarily in my relationships, my intimate relationships. And in order for me to engage in a healthy relationship, I really needed to discover how to become completely, or as much as I could, consciousness of my own behavior. And one of the keys to that was the work of Campbell and Jung and reading myths, not in a pejorative way. You know, we always say, that's just a myth, as if it's a pejorative. I actually learned to see myth in a highly reverent way. In a certain sense, those myths for me contain fundamental truths that were, stored in...
Stories.
Say it again?
Stored in stories.
Yeah, stored in stories. And those myths, in the same way as, a bird's behavior is to nest and to, a robin collect worms and give them to their children, to me, some of that fundamental stuff that it is to be human resides in those myths. And most of them, what's really interesting, there's one that's fascinating to me about, in fact, Robert Bly writes about this in a book called Iron John. It's the myth of the wild man, and in order for the wild man to finally come to consciousness, the wild man had to spend an awful lot of time in the garden, and then expelled from the garden into the wild. And that, to me, was a real key in terms of understanding that unless we allow ourselves to understand our fundamental and inseparable relationship with nature, we likely cannot reach consciousness.
Yeah, no. So one simple way to say this is, we all have these issues that John is talking about, and a simple way to describe them is that a lot of us live our lives, in fact, I would say virtually all of us, live our lives on automatic.
Well, and the thing that's really fascinating about that also is that it works in reverse as well. In order to reconnect or remember, as we've talked about in prior episodes with nature, we do have to become conscious. So it's a two-way street. And with regard to being practical about how to do that, what we're really looking for here, I think, Bill, is alignment, yes?
Yeah, I mean, that's really if we have to work on systems in a building, energy systems and water systems and envelope systems and then natural systems in which the building is part and then the community in which the building is a part, how do we actually work with the people that represent those various specialties requires us to be conscious of everyone's different perspective and to work consciously in aligning them.
And even more simply, we live in a culture, Western culture, which fundamentally ends up being dualistic. We isolate, we bifurcate, we package complex issues into reductionist thinking and sort of into two separate things, humans versus nature, science, religion, things and spirit, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, well, and the problem is we don't talk about the other side. We don't talk about that softer side or that undocumentable side, right? We can't put data on it. So
right.
We say that
it's
not relevant.
From our mind or from our it's logical or intuitive. Well, I think what we're trying to say is we're trying to align via consciousness the two of these as essentially being the same thing.
And so that we can become whole. And sustainability is ultimately about a whole system.
So with that said, I'd like to introduce Lauren. Lauren Yarmuth is principal in a firm called YRG Consultants. They're an international green consulting firm based in Manhattan and Colorado also, right, Lauren?
Yes.
Lauren has been working with an approach that sees consciousness as a primary aspect of achieving or pursuing sustainability. So, Lauren, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do and how you do that?
Yeah, well, my work on a daily basis is as a consultant in sustainability, but it really kind of comes from my background, which is trained as an architect, but before that, really focusing on poetry, actually, and ultimately getting into architecture as a language, as a way to bridge a lot of different disciplines and start to communicate. And so in the world of consulting and trying to support sustainability, primarily working in the building sector, it becomes a lot about that idea of communication, and it actually links, I think, very strongly back to what you're talking about in terms of story and myth and how to sort of relay some of these things which are maybe deeper inside of us or starting to acknowledge that all of this stuff, all of these buildings and things are being built and created by people. And so how do we start to make the links between those people? That's what we try to do.
So how do you pursue that on let's call it for purposes of this discussion a practical level in your work?
Yeah, well, I'm going to just interject here because we had one client say to us, and Lauren, I wonder if you have this experience. One guy said to me, "You know, my minister doesn't get away with saying the things you guys are saying." I want to just know, Lauren, how far are you pushing it, and does it need to be pushed, and how's it practiced?
Well, it's a good question, and I understand the minister comment, certainly. I think that there's different pieces to this. I can certainly say that in my consulting world, we operate on a really practical basis a lot of the time, but I also recognize that there are different levels that need to be addressed, and sometimes it's appropriate and sometimes it's not, but it's always sort of there. Mm. And I guess the big kind of place that it comes into play for me and ultimately into my work is trying to just sort of slow down and start to pay attention to kind of the stories underneath the stories, if you will, kind of what's going on with us, to slow down a little bit and just start to be aware. In a lot of ways, it's approaching things as a learner rather than someone who knows everything. And when you kind of shift that and you approach things from the perspective of trying to learn stuff, things really open up, and that becomes an opportunity of approaching all of our work, whether we're architects or developers or moms or whatever it is. And it's, I think, a pretty simple way to start. And that's less of a limiting creature factor, but an opportunity just to approach things a different way.
Well, that's great, Lauren. And we're going to take a break for a minute. I'd like to come back and continue on that line as soon as we do. So, folks, you're listening to Building Deeper Green. We'll be back in a few seconds.
Are you thinking green? Want to become a host expert on the Green Talk Network? Contact Jeff Spinard, president of our internet radio division, at 480-294-6417. That's 480-294-6417. Or click on How to Become a Host on our homepage. You're listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
Hey, y'all. This is Stephen Cochran. As a country artist, I have traveled around this great country of ours, often meeting our brave men and women in uniform. And as a Marine and veteran of both the Iraq and Afghan conflict, I know how important it is to thank our troops who defend our freedom each and every day. One of the best ways to thank them is to give their children and spouses the gift of education. Scholarships for 2 years, 4 years, and vocational school. This is exactly what a national charity, Thanks USA, does. Please go to their website, www.thanksusa.org, to make a generous donation to the Thanks USA Scholarship Fund for the families of the troops, and I thank you.
If you're thinking of starting a business or are already in business, tune in as the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur addresses business ownership concerns. Business novice or not, let the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur help you each week as we present and discuss the meat and potato issues of starting and running a business. Join the discussion. There's always room for your thoughts and opinions. The Kitchen Table Entrepreneur is a valuable program you should be tuning into every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Attention shoppers, if anyone is missing a rather plump set of love handles, please come to the customer service counter and claim them. The ample love handles were lost in the produce department where their former owner had purchased fruits and veggies to munch on during the big game. Thank you and have a good day.
Small step number 81, snack on fruits and veggies. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
We're back, folks, with our guest, Lauren Yarmuth. And we left before the break talking about quite a few things, but one that sticks in my mind is the idea of the story of stories. The story behind the stories. And Lauren, do you want to pick up there, or you can pick up anywhere else you might want to, where you're energized, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of what I'm hearing you talk about and what I think a lot about in this is kind of really thinking of where we come from in terms of not just what we do, but why we do it. And that's sort of these layers of stories, if you will. It's the understanding kind of the why behind it. And ultimately that will, of course, affect, you know, where we're really putting our energy and what we're up to. The term I like to think about or a way to approach it is this idea of an authentic endeavor or something where if we really kind of get down to what's meaningful inside of us, where are we coming from, what is authentic to us, that in a way is kind of the story inside the story. And when we tap into that place, we begin to do things a little bit differently. We make different decisions. Things become maybe more meaningful or at least more felt. And when we're there, sort of in that inner layer, it changes things a lot and ultimately I think is a different and perhaps more effective path towards this idea of sustainability that we're talking about.
So do you have some practical examples of that? What are some stories? Give us some stories, Lauren.
Yeah, well, maybe one way to talk about it is kind of where this started for me. I was sitting in a yoga class, and you know, this is after lots of training in architecture and training even in this field of sustainable building. And yet, I was sitting in this yoga class, and I was listening to the yoga teacher talk about whole systems. They were talking about whole systems in terms of us as human beings, and talking about how all these you know parts of our body work together, and how all these things sort of connect and link and. And I was thinking, my gosh, you know, that's just the idea of buildings. That's just the idea of kind of how we start to think about systems kind of in the built environment from an ideal perspective. And then it sort of, you know, was started to go deeper for me in thinking about, well, gosh, you know, in the same way that our body systems kind of link, and we're trying to think about how our building systems sort of link, and we're trying to optimize all of these things, there's sort of this, you know, deep opportunity there to kind of quiet down a little bit. And where that has become really relevant for me, and I'm by no stretch of the imagination a master at it. In fact, that's kind of the point. But sort of where you slow down a little bit and start to just kind of feel how something reacts. For example, if I'm in a project meeting and I suddenly feel myself get really tense and I kind of think, gosh, you're out, and then I can kind of realize that I can watch my own trend, my own reaction to things. And ultimately, if I follow that trail, it often leads me to be able to make better decisions that ultimately will be much more real and have a much more effective influence on the outcome of whatever we're trying to, whatever the product is of that discussion.
Wow, Lauren, I heard two really strong things there. One is the working with both right and left brain, which I think we really want to spend a little time chatting about. And the other is where you started, which is the why behind what we're doing. And it makes me want to tell a quick story, too, where I discovered that. Was what we now use in our work, sometimes called the five whys, and I think it's now become somewhat familiar, but I can remember working with a CEO of a major corporation, and we started off this meeting about lead, right? And we said, the first question we asked was, well, why are you building this building? Said, well, we need to house more staff. So we asked, well, why do you need to house more staff? And he said, well, because if I have more staff, the company makes more money. Well, why do you want the company to make more money? Because if the company makes more money, I make more money. Okay, why do you want to make more money? Now, at this point, there's a very long pause, right? And thinks for a minute. He says, well, because I have a mortgage and I have a kid I want to send to college. Okay, why do you have a mortgage and why do you want to send your kid to college? Well, because I want to take care of my family. Well, okay, why do you want to take care of your family? And he said, well, another long pause, because I love them. So the first thing that happened was, he said, well, gee, that's interesting. When's the last time any of us heard the word love in a business meeting? Second thing that happened was the energy in the room changed completely. Because it was now personal, the motivation behind designing and building this building was really linked fundamentally to his love for his family. The decisions changed dramatically. It was, what's behind the money is love of family. And a whole different set of decisions were now brought onto the table that wouldn't have been had that not been revealed. Now, to me, that's the story within the story.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that understanding and kind of getting down to that root why, if you will, behind the decisions we make and the things that we do. And also part of that is acknowledging that we have a lot of the answers in us already. It's not like there's some you know, fantastic, mysterious solution out there that we're just seeking to find. For the most part, we got it in us. It's just slowing down enough or digging in enough to kind of look at it and recognize it for what it is. And part of doing that, I think, is starting to create spaces that are safe for us. For people that we try to, you know, avoid judgments, try to, you know, connect with ourselves and with the people around us, be compassionate. And part of it, too, and maybe this is a big one, is kind of distinguishing between what I would consider sort of choice and habit. We have a tendency just to kind of keep going about things the way we always have, and we do that on a lot of different levels. It can be as simple as, you know, the route that you walk or drive to work, to the way that you design and build a building. And breaking it down of, is this a habit or is this a choice? Am I really being deliberate and conscious in my actions? That's where you can begin to operate from the source of those sort of five whys to link it back to your story, John.
So, Lauren, do you bring in that very thought, you let it arise, the idea of working between the choice of, or the habit and choice? Are you explicit about that in your charrettes, for instance?
It sort of depends. And a lot of it, I think, I see my role as a consultant being just a question asker, not coming in with the answers, because, again, the answers are often already there, but just coming in and trying to help ask some questions to kind of shift things around a little bit. And in that, it's really just trying to kind of help bring out that space of choice and shift out of the space of habit. And I think helping to shift a conversation, especially in a design charrette, for example, into a, well, you know, why are we doing it that way? What if we did it this way? What's another way to think about this?
Do you think this is, I'm putting words in your mouth on this one, so please push back, but do you think this is a foundation then for a sustainable process?
Yeah, I think it's maybe the only foundation for a sustainable process, because you know, we know that sustainability is in living systems. That's maybe the only place we've really seen it. And so we can go back to those systems to get a lot of answers, and I think that's what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're also asking an interesting question. It seems like you're asking folks to begin to operate not just from the left side of their brain, but also to allow intuitive leaps. In fact, it almost sounds, Lauren, and maybe it's better to ask you this question, do you feel as if you're asking folks to do that in the questions that you ask?
Not deliberately. I don't think that that I'm deliberately or not in an upfront way asking people to sort of make that shift, if I'm hearing you sort of. I think it's more creating a space where people can feel safe to venture and potentially providing some tools to accomplish that. I think that people have different goals and even different aptitudes, but a lot of it is helping people start to identify their core purpose. And I think that's a big part of this, is that behind all this stuff, all these buildings and all these actions, is a bunch of individuals who all have different motives and different goals. And you know, as you sort of pointed out in your chain of questions, you know, down to this place of kind of a root goal of love in that case, you know, we all have our kind of ambitions. And identifying what our core purpose is, what we can do in the world, helps us find ultimately a place where we acknowledge where we can do something that feels meaningful to us. And that's part of this, too, but in order to do that, you have to create the space for that opportunity.
All right, so in creating those sort of safe, non-judgmental places, a safe place for folks to explore and I guess, take leaps that might be outside of that conditioned response that you talked about, do you find that you can create, or what emerges is alignment between folks once they get to their purpose?
Yeah, I think that there is an opportunity for alignment, but I think as much as that is true, it's sort of really just opens up kind of a whole other set of questions. And maybe that's the point. It just keeps on being more questions. And in a lot of it, it's maybe the alignment is aligning with the right questions or questions that are meaningful to a given person and a given process.
So when do you know how to stop the questioning, Lauren? So you know, there is about the right questions. Or, you know, we keep asking questions after questions, which I certainly agree with what you're saying. But from on a practical basis, how do you work with the clients so that they're not frustrated?
Good question. I mean, you know, my instinctual answer when you started to ask the question was, we don't stop asking questions. We keep asking questions. But, no, obviously we have to kind of get to the bottom of something, especially if we're talking about buildings. We need to, you know, build the building and kind of get, you know, get down to some answers. And I think that there's two levels.
Well, Lauren, just hold that thought.
Yep.
Two levels or whatever you were going to say there. Because we're heading into a break and we'll be back momentarily.
This is the Green Talk Network, helping to provide a sustainable future for us all. If you're thinking of starting a business or are already in business, tune in as the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur addresses business ownership concerns. Business novice or not, let the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur help you each week as we present and discuss the meat and potato issues of starting and running a business. Join the discussion. There's always room for your thoughts and opinions. The Kitchen Table Entrepreneur is a valuable program you should be tuning into every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Hi, I'm Wendy Bellissimo with Nesting.com, proud sponsor of March of Dimes' premier walking event, March for Babies, formerly known as Walk America. You know, more babies begin healthy lives because of March of Dimes research and programs. And with our support, we can do even more for families all over America. One day, all babies will be born healthy, but we have to walk to get there. Join the March for Babies. Sign up at marchforbabies.org.
Where can you discuss environmental, ethical, and economic issues with the leading thinkers on these topics? Join host Shane Snipes for One Greener Radio. This program will spotlight key areas such as social impact and environmental ideas, as well as social entrepreneurship. Come on board for lively and engaging discussions with Shane and his experts. One Greener Radio promises to keep you thinking and brainstorming for more. One Greener Radio is broadcast live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Green Talk Network.
The Green Talk Network is here. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking today with our guest, Lauren Yarmuth, and exploring the role consciousness plays in our work when we're trying to pursue sustainability. We're calling it the fifth universal element. And right before the break, Lauren, you talked about this idea of core purpose, and that in the dynamic of trying to explore and ask questions in, let's say, a workshop where we're trying to make decisions, because you did say we do have to find some answers on some level, so much of that core purpose is dependent upon personal development. So my question there is, what's the relationship between the personal development and discovery of core purpose and the group dynamic in that kind of a scenario where most of us do our work?
It's a great question, John, and I think that they're in many ways very separate, but ultimately it's kind of the point and the real core of this conversation. I think ultimately as we develop ourselves personally, we start to tap into that idea of integrity or of operating from a place that is authentic. And when we do that, we start to ultimately, I think, take responsibility for the outcome of our actions and start to identify systems as things that are all interrelated and our roles as being fundamental and critical as part of that system. And I think that's where success on a project and on a personal level really begins.
So when I've talked to Bill about this in the past. Bill, you said, in fact, when we were talking about it over the break, you said, well, wait a minute, different people have different core purposes. So how does that play when you're talking about a group dynamic all trying to find an integrative solution across multiple disciplines and systems?
Well, I think different people have different core purposes, and they also have different roles on a project. And that's kind of part of the natural system that we're operating within. But I think that what we find is that our core purposes, when we really get down to it, generally aren't that different. I mean, I think that if you asked a lot of different people, your chain of whys, there probably are only a couple, really.
I would guess there's probably 10 or 15, but they're close enough to be limit the variables to work with.
Well, I really want to follow this because the reason I asked the question is what for years now, even in teaching architectural design, you know, way back when in the mid 80s, I was really interested in exploring far less how we're different and far more how we're fundamentally the same. The question I have is, when we get to core purpose, is it in fact so similar, given the sort of Akashic field reality of us all being inextricably interconnected and one, that there is a sort of, I hesitate to use the word universal set of core purposes, but at least once you get to that level, alignment's not so tough at all.
Yeah, I've just to kind of chime in on that. I've done some little exercises with groups of folks and kind of played with this idea a little bit. And what generally I find is that if you can kind of get people quiet with themselves and start to get down to that place of really understanding what drives us, those values that drive tends to be pretty similar. So I would agree.
For certain, there's just let me chime in on this one. For certain, people are pretty comfortable with getting down. Maybe they're not comfortable in those settings, but ultimately, people are comfortable with getting out down to the idea of love. But we do have different roles on the planet, and in addition to purpose, we also have different ways of working. There's core purpose, core processes, and there's then the value adding that you're able to do from your particular worldview and perspective. And ultimately, you need to what Susan Whalen in her book Creating Effective Teams describes. This isn't necessarily about getting people aligned around the same. They don't have to be automatons. They don't have to be huggy feely. They don't have to do a ropes course together to do effective work and aligned work. What she found out, as long as people were aligned around the purpose for the project, or the purpose of the work or the master plan or whatever issues you may be addressing, you could get people from many different walks of life and perspectives to gel around the purpose of the project itself. And so this whole idea of purpose comes in many different dimensions.
I think though we're talking about it on a deeper level here.
What I wanted to get at though is that we don't have to feel that we have to discover everybody's individual purpose at that level. I think it's very healthy to do that, but it's not necessary to work on a project. I'm just trying to make it very practical here, that's all.
Right, and that's a process anyway, right? I mean, in other words, I'm not sure any of us ever feel like we've found the answer of our purpose in our lives, right? But when, Lauren, you say keep asking questions, if you're asking those questions in a way that allows folks to feel safe doing that, then chances are that you'll get to, I'm seeing this in our work too, I'm supposing you're finding that alignment can occur in a way that a new energy emerges in the room that's maybe a little bit larger or stronger than each of the individual separate purposes.
Yeah, and it's magic, you know, it's a process of getting out of our own way. We have
right.
a tendency to make things really difficult for ourselves. And, part of it, I think, is that a lot of us have learned, and it's a bigger process and a bigger web that we're in, but we've sort of found meaning, our personal meaning in our lives from our differences, from the distinctions that we're trying to create about our opinion or our approach. And so it's really hard to let go of that because that's become our whole sense of self. That's that little... you know, sort of our friend of the ego that we mentioned earlier. And so you hold on to it really tight because that's where we sort of feel like we have meaning in the world is through those differences. But if you can, one way or another, kind of start to, you know, peek through a little deeper, I do think that pretty consistently we find that what we're trying to get at is usually the same thing. We're just kind of holding up these differences kind of making things hard for ourselves because that's...
Well, because we're not working from core.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you said, this core purpose. If we can understand that there are more similarities than differences, that helps us bridge these gaps. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Is that what you're saying, Lauren?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we're at an interesting place in this conversation because there's two different places I want to go with it. One is, all right, how do we actually, Lauren, how do you actually do this in those rooms in a practical way? And the other place I want to go with it is, well, all right, what you're really talking about here is folks feeling safe enough to discover their love of self in a way that reduces the fear of taking a leap outside their comfort level. So on the one hand, I see a path in this conversation that's leading toward a discussion about self-love, and on the other hand, I see a path about, okay, well, how do you, what's the practical way that you make it a safe enough place in those rooms? And I don't know if we can do both, but I'd love to have a two-bottle of wine discussion about each.
I think that's the same thing.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. Go ahead, Bill.
Oh, no, why don't you pick up on that, Lauren, please?
Well, I mean, I think that they're actually very similar. In both cases, it's a lot about kind of checking your goals. and really trying to kind of tap into what are you trying to accomplish, whether it's on a personal level or whether it's on, for example, a project level. If you can identify those goals up front, whether it's, you know, sitting down in a first kickoff meeting or just kind of sitting down with yourself and thinking, what do I care about here? What do I want? And then, you know, the second part of it is sort of considering the systems and remembering that all these things kind of work together. Just in the same way that we try to, when we're in a personal development process, try to kind of remember the patterns or look at our parents or look at, you know, the way we are in our relationships and sort of starting to really come to an awareness of that. I think the same thing is true in a project or in a more practical application, where when we can start to recognize that these things are all kind of working together, it gives us something to kind of react to and bounce against. So that idea of a core purpose, a core goal, and then an acknowledgement of an interwovenness becomes very common in between those different dynamics and sort of fundamental to this.
Mm. So we're talking about a process of development. Is that fair, Lauren, to say that?
Yeah, I think so. I think the goal is a personal or external development.
You know, I used to really react negatively to the term sustainable development. You know, a lot of people do, because they equate to the word development with how we've destroyed the land.
As opposed to its real definition.
Yeah, the real definition of develop. And I don't know, have we gone down this road in
the
show, John?
We've gone there twice, actually, already, I believe.
No, it's worth going again.
So,
the definition of develop is to create new potential. And I'm just going to make this statement, that I believe that we cannot create new potential in the world unless we are working on creating new potential in ourselves.
Ah, so there is the fundamental link.
Let me check. Lauren, does that statement resonate?
I think that's a great way to think about it, absolutely.
So what's cool about this work and why your work is so the way you're so lucid about this subject, Lauren, is that we don't need to come in like the minister, because that will be a turnoff.
that plan doesn't work.
Yeah, well, we tried it. Doesn't go. You know.
Yeah, well,
been there, done that.
Several centuries. Yeah, you know, but we're past it, I think.
Right. So, what it is by actually managing our own state and awareness of and bringing love into the situation and inviting a dialogue at that level, we're opening up the possibilities for people to become who they really are, which allows potentially the projects to become who they are. And this is where I'm so entranced by the word development now as one of the most positive words out there.
It's interesting, because what, Bill, I think I heard you just link is development with love.
Right.
And I would actually link that further to the word compassion. I think that all those things are part of kind of what we need in order to proceed.
Well, let's come right back to that right after the break. I hope you're listening to Building Deeper Green with our guest today, Lauren Yarmuth, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
The Green Talk Network is here. Spread the green.
Do you know what it takes to reach massive success? Do you know that if you change your thinking,
you can change your life?
The Development Connection with host Amy Himes will give you the keys to reach ultimate success. Each show will feature topics to help you reach personal, career, and business ownership success. And you'll learn how to enlarge your vision to move ahead in life and within your organization. The Development Connection with Amy Himes is live every Monday on Voice America at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific. Listen today and move forward tomorrow.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Issa provides homeowners and investors eager to invest well in real estate the knowledge, resources, and tools necessary to generate significant wealth. Our focus will be the paradigm. Live where you want. Invest where it makes the most sense. Listen live to the brightest minds in real estate investment every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. That's Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Issa, where America learns to invest.
Eco-conscious trends and lifestyles. You're listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green. You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking today with our guest, Lauren Yarmuth, about the practical implications, if you will, of consciousness in our work in integrative design and living systems and sustainability. And Lauren, right before the break, you used the word compassion, and just before that, Bill linked love and development. So these are really fascinating intertwinings here. I guess the question that's begging to be asked is how? How do we make it work in terms of when we're trying to do this work?
How do we practice it?
How do we practice this?
Well, I'll start with a little story. I had this wonderful opportunity yesterday. I've been sort of learning a new martial art, and I had this great opportunity to train for a brief period of time with someone who's sort of a master in this art. And he had me standing on one leg, and he said, "Now drop." And I said, "What do you mean drop?" And he said, just drop straight down to the ground and let your leg completely let go and bend." And I was standing there thinking, I can't. My leg doesn't do that. It just simply doesn't let go and drop like that. And he said, just try it. And I did. And I finally dropped, and I just fell. and I thought, well, that can't be what I was supposed to do. And he said, well, no, but you'll just try again. And eventually what you'll learn is how to get your mind out of your way, because your mind is the thing telling you that your leg can't bend like that. And in fact, it can, but you're holding yourself back. And I think a lot of that is kind of where this is. It's like, how do we get out of our own way? One of the tools that I find to be really helpful and effective in a very practical way, because we all do it, is breathing. Just remembering to kind of slow down for a minute and breathe. I try to do this a lot in workshops and meetings, and just kind of, if you watch yourself, when we are being stubborn or coming from a place of habit or kind of getting stuck, we tend to not breathe. We tend to have shallow breath in our, kind of upper chest, and we tend to really get tight there. And if you just shift it and you sort of go, what if I took a deep breath and just sort of get yourself out of where you were into another space, through breath, it tends to just open it up to where you can potentially start to have some of those connections that we're talking about.
It's like biofeedback. I don't want to degrade it that way, because the nature of our body and minds are so interconnected. We've forgotten that message. I mean, look at Western. I think what you're kind of your example of the martial arts, Lauren, is that, it's like our Western medicine. We use our mind to solve these problems, and Eastern tradition certainly has allowed us to actually work use our bodies to solve our technologies to solve the problems. And in fact, it's typically our mind that gets in the way of being healthy.
There's another, that brings to mind something. Another little technique that I've found useful is just simply being conscious of being present. In other words, yep, there's something bothering me here, and I start to follow that in my brain, and I'm no longer present in the room. And if I can remind myself just to be present in the right now, I mean, this exact second, right now, that what bothered me doesn't matter, and what's about to happen doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is right now.
Yeah, which is the only moment that exists.
In fact, it's eternity in a way, yes?
Which is why breath can be such a good tool, because it's right there in that moment. I mean, what happens, I think, when you sort of start to do this work a little bit and try to tune into the now like you're talking about, is you learn the indicators in yourself. And I know them in me as being, you know, I start to get tense or I have a stomach ache for some reason or my, you know, my chest is kind of tight. Like, these are the things that for me are, I can sort of quickly realize that something's going on that's making me kind of get clogged up. And so I'll be able to kind of just, like, shake it off, literally. And, I mean, animals know this. There'll be something that'll happen to them. They'll be, you know, become afraid of something or something, and they'll tense up. They'll, in fact, freeze. And humans do the same thing. But what animals know to do is as soon as they realize that it's okay, they literally shake off. You see animals literally shake their whole body. Humans often don't ever shake. We don't ever get it out of us. So we're just kind of continuing to run around, you know, with all these blockages, if you will. And
the stress, right?
Stress
is affecting us so negatively.
Yeah. So learning to kind of, you know, be in the moment of it and kind of shake it off or identify and start to recognize the indicators that we have, very real indicators that that can be, in, you know, sort of show us that we're probably not tapping into the place that we've, you know, been talking about where a lot of those answers and a lot of those solutions and a lot of the real opportunity lay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, Lauren, this has really been a fantastic discussion today. And, you know, it's fun that in the end here, it almost came back to the physical, right? You're talking about you can recognize the physical sensation in your body that tells you to be aware of exactly what's happening right now.
That's
right. Wow. Lauren, this has been great. Thank you very much for sharing with us some of the things that you've discovered and how you've discovered them and how you're doing this in your work. It's been really great today. Thank
wait,
you.
Wait, before we let Lauren go.
No, I don't want to let her go either, but we're running out of time.
No, this is, you know, just, John, you and I know how important this is for this work and why it's, but, you know, this is so important, and we're only giving it one show. I mean, I know we've been intertwining it through the episodes, but boy, I would love if anybody's listening out there, whoever's listening out there, to let us know if this is interesting enough to you, because we would love to spend more time exploring this. This is so important.
Well, the next show, Bill, we don't really have anything specifically identified. We sort of left it open to see where we might want to go with this, and if folks are interested, that would be maybe a fun thing to do.
Yep. So we'll see what happens, and I'm sure we'll be coming back to this. So, Lauren, thanks so much.
Thank you, Bill and John. It's a great program.
All right. We'll talk later. Bye. So, where are we going to go with this, John? Wow. Not sure we are coming across here. Well, I guess if there's a technical glitch, we'll just keep on running. John, maybe we'll dial back in. So, the nature of Eastern tradition and how we begin to embrace this more whole approach to designing whole systems is something that we will be exploring more in terms of food systems. How do you actually work with companies in this practical manner? How we can actually work on the system of life in place, the power of story that Lauren talked about, actually is used in understanding landscapes, too. And so this combination of not just the building work that we do, but the work with all living systems, humans and the nature and the food systems out there, are where we're going in the next few episodes. John, are you back on?
Yes, I am. So this sounds really fun. And I think one of the things we discovered today, and I think has been a theme throughout the whole show, and I believe will continue to be, is that once this work becomes deeply personal, we discover that what we're working with is what really is meaningful to us. And in a lot of ways, this work is really an exploration of meaning. So, one thing that Gail Lindsay, a good friend of ours, liked to say, she'd like to quote Walt Whitman by saying very simply, "Re-examine all that you have been told, miss that which insults your soul." And I think that's a pretty good thing to remember as we continue to realize that to do different things, we need to do things differently.
And to do things differently, we need to think about them differently.
And to think differently, we need to be different. Thanks, everyone. See you next time.
Bye.
For tuning in this week to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. Please join us again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Green Talk Network, and make it a great and greener weekend.